it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello once again, welcome to this week's episode of New Horizons. Thanks for your company, I'm Vaughn Benison. This week we're going to hear the first of two programs on the session at the Blind Citizens Australia Convention in October. This session was the one on emotional well-being. Firstly, we'll hear from Emma Benison, who will introduce the session and also tell us about the panel members. Now, this session has been heavily edited, and owing to time constraints, I had to completely rearrange the speakers. But the information is still well worth listening to, because some of the research is absolutely fascinating. Here's Emma Benison.
Before I introduce the panel members that I have with me up here today, I just wanted to talk about what do we actually mean by emotional well-being, and why does it matter in terms of blindness? And I guess some of the things that we've been talking about as a panel have been what a significant impact the low expectations of society can have on people who are blind or vision impaired. That is certainly an issue which plays into people's sense of self and sense of well-being. Equally important, though, I think, is the high expectations that we, as people who are blind or vision impaired, place upon ourselves, and that society sometimes, or particularly our families, sometimes place on us, particularly if we've been blind since birth. And that can equally have an impact. Of course, we know that emotional well-being doesn't necessarily have anything to do with blindness. So I certainly don't want us to come away with the view that anyone who experiences any kind of mental health issue must be due to blindness. Sometimes it has nothing to do with it whatsoever. But today we're going to be looking at the particular intersection between emotional well-being and blindness. So I just want to start by introducing our panelists. We have Paula Hobley with us. Paula has a social work background, and she's a student doing a PhD in relation to the emotional well-being of people with early onset blindness and vision impairment. Then we have Bonnie Sturrock, who's from the Centre for Eye Research Australia. And Bonnie is a research fellow and a clinical psychologist who's been doing work in a similar area around emotional well-being, researching the intersection between emotional well-being and blindness. And then we have Vanessa Ransley, and Vanessa is a BCA member. She also works in music education. She's a music teacher and experiences anxiety. And I think I should also say at this point that I myself also experience anxiety. And I think it's important to say that, not because, you know, I want people's sympathy, because I don't, but just to say that people often think that leaders, people in leadership positions, are exempt from mental health issues, or that they're actually not allowed to experience mental health issues and they have to be on top of all those things. The reality is that's, I think, almost never the case. And I think that people who lead often experience mental health issues. It's very difficult for people to talk about them, but I think that in our community it's important that our leaders stand up and if they're comfortable to do so and actually talk about these issues, because I think it helps everybody else feel more comfortable to talk about these issues if people in leadership roles are leading by example. So that's why I was very keen to chair this session. So I'm going to start with Paula, if that's okay. And Paula's going to spend a bit of time talking to us about her research. Then I'll hand over to Bonnie to talk about her research. So Paula, can I hand over to you now, please?
I thought I would just tell you a little bit about what led me to research this area. Growing up in a rural area, going through school, moving to uni, you know, doing the whole undergraduate degrees, finding and maintaining jobs and all of the issues that sort of come up, you know, throughout that process. In particular, it's not just about getting the job, it's keeping the job, made me start to think, well, what is it like for people who are blind or vision impaired as a group? Is there, you know, what are the factors that influence emotional well-being here? So that led me to do some research, as Emma said, with people with early onset blindness or vision impairment. I measured the emotional well-being against the age range, which is 18 to 34 of the same for the general population, found similarities with regard to standard of living, life achievements, and personal relationships, but there were differences when it came to satisfaction with health, feeling of safety, community involvement, and future security. So just sort of reflecting on that and thinking about what are some things that contribute to, you know, our emotional well-being, and what are some things that take away from it. The results of the research sort of centred around there were a lot of issues around access, and not just accessing transport and the, you know, the local infrastructure, but also accessing printed material or having access to a sighted person if that's needed to read mail, etc. The trust and the bond with guide dog came up as an issue. Also, even just mainstream things like relationships, you know, relationships with partner or spouse or family, children, owning a home or having a home that people can call their own, that was something that came up that was a contributor to subjective well-being. And spirituality came up, having a faith or religion, so something spiritual to turn to. So there's some of the things that came up just in the online survey part of my research. I'm actually conducting, for people who are interested, a focus group of people need to be aged 18 to 34. There's already research out there that looks at different other age ranges, but so looking at doing that in December. If people want to email me, they can, and my email address, if people wanted to take it down, is phobley, phobley at deakin, deakin .edu.au.
And Paula, is that only open to people in Victoria, or is it
no? It's
is it telephone national, based?
It's online.
Online.
Okay. It'll be an online Zoom. Will be the platform that we'll be using. So
that's good. Now I'd like to pass over to you, Bonnie, to talk about your research.
Just wanted to say thank you, everyone, for having me here. As Emma said before, I've come from the Centre for Eye Research in Australia, or what we call as CERA for short. And I work there as a research fellow and also a clinical psychologist, and I've been there since 2012. During the time that I've worked there, I've worked on two projects that have aimed to provide emotional support services to people with vision impairment and blindness. So we focus on aiming to provide those to the community because depression and poor quality of life and also anxiety are really quite common in people with vision impairment. In fact, I think what the research shows is that about 7% of people with vision impairment will experience anxiety at any given time, and up to 43% of people with vision impairment experience depressive symptoms, which is really quite large given that only about 16% of the general adult population without vision impairment experience depression at some stage in their life. But what we've also found is that despite the high prevalence of depression, that only a small percentage of people actually receive the support that they need. So we found that only 1 in 5 people with depression actually receive that support to manage their symptoms. And that's due to a lot of different factors, but most commonly, depression's quite often missed. And there's also not that many psychological interventions that actually focus on treating depression in people with vision impairment. And there's limited services also across Australia within vision rehab settings as well. And that's kind of across the world. So in the US, they showed that less than 25% of vision rehab services had access to psychological interventions, and less than 5% had access to a psychologist on site. But one of our studies actually showed as well that a lot of people do want support. So it was around 67% said that they really wanted that support. So that's why we focused on, first of all, identifying depression in people with vision impairment, and then on actually developing programs for people to treat the depression. So the first project that I was employed on was to train Vision Australia staff across Australia. And that was in a problem-solving model. And it was for those staff to be able to effectively provide that service to clients. And problem-solving is all about assisting with emotional well-being and depression and quality of life. And it's an evidence-based approach. So it's been used overseas. And it's shown to be effective for those things, so improving depression. And that's why we popped that into place. And problem solving really helps people to gain a sense of control when so many things are out of the person's control. And it's all about people taking action over challenges. So it was really to set up to empower people to just manage those day-to-day challenges. And it's a common sense approach as well. So we all do some form of problem solving in our minds, but this one goes into more depth and more structure to solve problems more effectively. And it includes 7 steps. So first of all, it's about defining the nature of the problem, and then identifying a goal to work towards and considering the different, with the different solutions, then looking at the pros and cons of those different solutions after brainstorming. And then people choose the best solution based on the best benefits and break that down into a plan of action. So that's where people can really focus on starting to solve the problem and also look at how they went. That's the last step in the program. So because we all know that barriers pop up in life. And what we found from that research is the program actually did lead to reduced depressive symptoms in the people that we offered it to. And those changes actually stayed up until 12 months, which shows that it was really quite a helpful program. So since that time, Vision Australia has actually taken that service up in their youth pre-employment program. And that's designed to assist young people between the ages of 16 to 25 to get the necessary skills for employment and also improve their employment prospects. And Vision Australia is also wanting to actually roll out problem solving across all of the staff members eventually, with their focus of having the staff more multi-skilled in the future.
And we'll continue that discussion from Bonnie at the Centre for Eye Research in next week's program, where we'll also hear the comments from Vanessa Ransley. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Don't forget the Blind Citizens Australia office has opened again this week, and they will be ready to take your call if you've got any questions or comments on blindness or vision impairment, and you need any assistance with advocacy, or indeed if you'd like to donate to the organisation, then give them a call on 1-800-033-660, 1-800-033-660. You can donate online, and you can also find a wealth of information on the Blind Citizens Australia website. That's www.bca.org, and of course the email address is bca@bca.org.au. Do take care, and I'll talk to you again next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.